There's always a reason for better health, and here's Carlo with his.
My program with Awaken 180 actually started when my daughter was born, and at that time, I was over 300 pounds. I felt I owed it to her to better myself and my family, of course. And I'll never forget, it was my fourth week. I came in and my goals for that week were not met. And they found the positive in everything. And that was the biggest thing for me. Awaken 180 has provided me confidence, not only in my day-to-day eating, it's my day-to-day role as a father, as a friend. And that's something that for the longest time, I didn't have.
The benefits are endless after losing weight with Awaken 180. Carlo dropped his 84 pounds, and he did it in under 4 months. Scale results, life results, with the solution for weight loss online at awaken180weightloss.com.
B-Pod Studios.
Hey, this is WWE Hall of Famer and Olympic gold medalist Kurt Angle, and you're listening to the Wrestling Inside the Ropes podcast with James Stewart and Mike Riley. Oh, it's true. It's damn true.
Joined by Mike Riley and Joe Murray this week, want to lead off with this question, and here's the backstory to it. Is Vince McMahon selling the WWE? Now, here's where all of this started. Dutch Mantel, no blue check mark, but at Dirty D Mantel on April 27th, a Monday, tweeted, quote, "Huge news. Any truth to this? Overheard directly out of Stamford, Connecticut, WWE, Stamford, is that a deal is being negotiated to sell WWE and network to at ESPN and at Fox by as early as mid-May," unquote. Then on Wednesday, I got this text from a friend of ours in the financial world. Joe, you're very familiar with him. Quote, "Vince is selling WWE, by the way. Disney and Fox are in a bidding war for it. Doesn't mean it will happen. Vince has lost millions with the XFL and believes WWE will collapse within 5 years. Vince wants to get out now while he can. It came from the top," unquote. So Mike Riley, Joe Murray from Over Under 98.5 and from Just Sitting Here podcast, "I have a hard time thinking that Vince McMahon is going to sell the family business. But Mike, I'll start with you. With all that information, what do you think?"
So, yeah, it doesn't seem that he's a third generation guy in charge of the company, built the empire, changed the whole landscape of it. It doesn't seem like this is his motive to do that. But a text message I got from someone that is involved with the company, and I'll read it to you what I got. "Vince was only looking out for his stockholders in the last 2 weeks. And with that behind him, the feeling around everyone is like when he introduced the NWO in 2002. So you remember when the NWO came in and that whole little gimmick, I'm going to destroy my company. I think people in the company are nervous that Vince is actually going to do this. XFL, fold there. WrestleMania, lose a ton of money there. Fighting with, well, I guess working things out in a backhanded way in the state of Florida and so forth. And, you know, working without a crowd. Frustration. So maybe now would be the time to cash in. Sure, it makes sense. But ESPN and Fox are two separate entities. ESPN was very interested in obtaining either SmackDown or Raw when the contracts were up a couple of years ago. So now would be a prime opportunity to jump on it for ESPN. They have made it very clear that they want more WWE programming. And could you ask for a better time right now with nothing going on? I mean, it's a home run for them. But I cannot see Vince McMahon doing this. I think from what we've seen him put his life into, be so passionate still at 74 years of age when he's about to be 75 in August, I just can't see him selling essentially his baby. Not going to happen.
Joe Murray, your thoughts?
So off the bat, when I hear about it, it reminds me of just what WWE has gone through in just the last month, whether it's the loss of the XFL, them laying people off, them furloughing employees, letting go of lifelong, right-hand men to Vince McMahon. So, you know, the rumors coming out right now, they're not surprising, because really the whole world right now is dealing with some sort of economic crunch. And really what it comes down to with the WWE is stakeholders. So maybe this is something where Vince is like, okay, you know, let's try to see who's out there. We know that ESPN, I believe, is moving on from something soon. I forget what it was. Is it like a part of a Disney pack? Something. They're
Disney Plus.
On. Disney Plus. Okay. So they're moving out on that. They might want to add something new. So the best thing for them and for Fox, let's say, would be the library, right? That's probably one of the biggest resources. We know that ESPN played all the WrestleManias that week. In FS1, all they do is replay, you know, old matches and things of that degree. So I think they like the library. But on an economic point of view, like, maybe they're trying to see what the value is. Because right now, the only way they're making money, guys, is through the WWE Network. Is there any other source of income right now?
Their TV rights deals is what's carrying them right now.
Okay.
And maybe that's why this person thinks that 5 years the WWE is gone, because live events lost $3.2 million in the quarter. And so the Saudi prince and the $2 billion plus in USA and Fox Network rights, that's what's making them a profit.
So where I'm going with it is this. I think for them to continue to be this juggernaut, they're not going to be able to bring in Goldberg for an appearance. Like, the Undertaker may not be able to get his $1 million per appearance or whatever it is. They might have to go with some of the younger talent that's maybe not as developed, that doesn't make as much money. They might have to honor some of these long-term deals going forward. So to your point there, like, maybe they're on a money crunch where they're looking at it and saying, all right, there might not be people actually in stands, you know, and maybe really, like, the one thing with WCW was, right, they didn't have the TV rights. That's something that WWE has and is profitable. But I still think this is all about the stock market, trying to get that value out there for their stakeholders. And if they do sell, I don't think Vince McMahon's giving up the reins whatsoever. We briefly texted about this, but similar situation with the UFC, right? Dana White still is in control of UFC. Well, I think Vince McMahon would never give up that control, correct? So if he sold, don't you think he'd still have a stake with WWE? Maybe he's selling the library off. Maybe he's selling parts of the network off. But overall, Vince McMahon, I think, will always have a hand in WWE, unless he's looking at the long term and he's looking at this as this might not be as profitable as he once envisioned.
So a few people in and around the wrestling business I interacted with this week, and they all kind of sung a similar song when I put forth this information. They had seen some of it too. And the consensus was that Vince would rather sell off the WWE than let the company die on his watch.
Mm.
And that kind of struck me. And it leads me to this question. Is pro wrestling dying? Is sports entertainment dying? In other words, TV ratings being lower and the viewership of people who are watching being older, is there a lack of interest in the current wrestling product, even though TV companies were willing to pay stupid money for the product? And now, granted, there is an element of digital viewing and social media at hand as well. Those numbers we don't know about unless, as a company, they decide to promote about it. So is wrestling dying a slow and painful death right now?
Well, the Raw ratings this week were the lowest they've been in 25 years. And, you know, obviously we touch on it every week. We've done it the last month. We know there's no crowd there. The interest level, we're post WrestleMania. We do have a pay-per-view coming up in less than a week now, Money in the Bank. That's one of the reasons why they moved Money in the Bank to May after WrestleMania. And it's the second year in a row they've done that. So hopefully that'll give them a little bit of a boost here. But this past week, the ratings on Raw speak for itself. It was the lowest in 25 years. And also, there was Christmas Eve of this past year, 2019, very low ratings as well. At one point, I think it was the Apollo Crews Andrade match this week. That was the same amount of the same numbers they had on Christmas Eve of 2019. That's pretty tough. So to your point, that your question is pro wrestling dying, is the interest level not there? I just think that right now it's so hard to keep that viewership there and keep everyone interested when there's not a lot of buzz going on. They're doing I look at AEW compared to what they've done compared to WWE. It's night and day there. They are still gaining interest levels with me I think with other people too, but WWE right now, not a lot of interest with people. That is for sure.
So Mike, if AEW is gaining interest, then why are their ratings down? Why are their viewership numbers down 300,000 since December?
They are gaining. Well, let me say this. I have an interest level with them because.
Nice, you're an AEW guy. Go.
Oh, yeah, bring it on. I thought this past week's Dynamite was maybe the best one that they've done since they started taping.
Would you say it's Dynamite? Ah.
Dynamite times 100, baby.
Come on, Joe. I can't get a pop out of you.
Yeah, Joe's like a poker face over there. No. But no, I think.
Jerry Trupiano loves that joke, by the way.
What they've done, though. You know, from the crowd in there and just simple storytelling, character development, it has worked in their favor. WWE having a very difficult time to just keep people engaged in a week by week basis. Not everyone is going down to work. Not everyone wants to work either. And I think AEW, we haven't seen Jon Moxley still as a champion. He hasn't been on in a while either. But, you know, we don't see the superstars week in, week out in WWE as well. So my point is, you're not seeing everyone on a week-by-week basis. I think that's a big factor there. And they're just not capitalizing with the audience to continue to garner ratings.
Didn't I see Moxley do a video promo this past week? And didn't he defend the title against Swagger the week before?
Either 2 weeks ago. And that was a controversial match because it wasn't that good.
Really? I love that match. But Joe, go.
Oh, no. I mean, it's funny because I watched it. I tried to get into it. You're going to have Swagger lose to Mox without any hype on a regular TV show?
No, so they hyped it for weeks.
They did hype it for weeks, but come on. Yeah. Like, you're going to do it on a TV show? And granted, the ratings are low right now. Did they think that was going to save it? It didn't. By the way, to throw in another troop comment, I want to go way back because that's what wrestling fans are doing right now. They're watching the library. They're into all the old stuff. So everything new, it's like, who's this guy? Oh, here comes... This Zelina Vega and these three guys again, like over and over and over. I'll tell you right now, the SmackDown this week was brutal. And I know how many times, for the first time ever, it's Daniel Bryan versus Baron Corbin. Are you kidding me? For the first time ever, Cole? How many times have we seen that stupid match? You know what I mean? And like, the more I watch it, SmackDown's brutal. I'm sorry. It's brutal. And I know they're trying to pump up that's like the main, with all the main wrestlers and the main stars. The Bray Wyatt angle is still good. That is something that you got to watch every week. You'll fast forward through it. You'll get to that, and you'll fast forward the rest. Raw right now is bad. Yeah. I have liked AEW. The ratings are better on AEW than they are in NXT. NXT has literally dropped. Ever since the Ciampa-Gargano match, what has happened to it? It's been really bad. So are fans losing interest? Yes. I think they're losing interest because, A, they can't go to the events. B, there's nobody in the stands. See, it's like, why are they even out here doing this? Because that's still an issue as well. The show goes on, but at the same time, I think they've hurt themselves during this epidemic. And I think it's been good for us, the fans, to still have it. But at the same time, for business stance and what's happening in the world, it's just not a top priority for people.
Yeah. Good job, Joe. Good rant. Yeah. Good rant there. Good stuff. A few things. Ring of Honor, I think, has done well, and they've been completely shut down as far as their in-ring product goes. They've been doing their weekly TV with just profiling wrestlers, which I think has been great. And AEW has taken this time to educate fans on what moves are signature moves of wrestlers in little video packages. And I think those little details should help long-term in the audience understanding, like, okay, this is a move to look out for. That more athletic-based programming. That's just what I think in AEW. And meanwhile, WWE just kind of goes along like, of course you're following our stories. Of course we're going to recap the last segment three times before we get to the end of the show. You know, the thing I will say about WWE is I think their promos have been stronger with the empty arena because they haven't been having to deal with the what chants. So their promo work is better, but I'm not necessarily sure, like, and we're going to talk about Money in the Bank in a little bit here, but like, you look at who's in these Money in the Bank matches and...
Yeah. Is there interest?
I'm interested. We'll get to the men's match because I have an interesting idea for the men's match. But
can I just bring up one more thing?
Please do, Joe.
I think the fact that these guys... What is WWE really good at? House shows, right? Building.
They make movies.
Yeah, but going on tour, right? Like, all right, we're here.
Oh, live events, yeah.
It's going to be Daniel Bryan and Baron Corbin going at it this night. Here tonight, watch Baron Corbin. Like, they go to different places, and then, boom, they're on TV that week. So they've worked all week. They've developed. They know the scripts. Here, I feel like these guys aren't getting as much work in, and the work isn't as good. Where I will say on AEW, I think the work is fantastic. Yep, like, yep. And maybe it's only because they get that once a week to leave it all on the line. I don't think the WWE stars, when it's that once a week, they're not building, telling the story, Jimmy. They're not. AEW is doing a better job at that than WWE. That's a fact. And I think with these young performers, that's an issue for them. The Baron Corbins of the world. You know, we haven't seen Bray Wyatt besides since WrestleMania? Like, you know, we don't need Alexa Bliss and Nikki Cross to come out here. Like, they just.
Oh,
they,
I do. I know.
And I know you like
week.
Them, but what I'm saying is, they're trying to push Dana Brooke on us, right? She needs more work. Like, these people need more work. Drew Gulak needs more work. But, I'm just saying that AEW, these guys, when they wrestle, they leave it all on the line. Darby yep. Allin leaves it all on the line week in and week out. Sammy Guevara, on the line. Dustin Rhodes, say whatever you want.
Oh, my God, yes.
Every single week.
Older he gets, the better he is.
And I just think that WWE, these young professionals, yep. aren't getting enough reps in, and they don't look good when they're on the national spotlight.
So, Joe, let me address one of the major differences between WWE ring work and AEW ring work. Is WWE has a certain style of match that they do. And so Baron Corbin, for example, is conditioned to do a move, wait for the crowd to react, go to your next move, go to your next sequence. And it's pretty well timed out with the referee giving cues. And this is way behind the scenes. If this were a 2020 report, I'd get slapped in the face for it. AEW is the wrestlers have input into what they're going to do. They kind of feel the match. They're at a different pace because they're coached differently. They're coached, not produced or directed. And there's more of a feel that the AEW roster has performed in front of 5, 10, 15, 20 fans. And they're also performing in front of other wrestlers. So it's the whole thing is, if you can pop the wrestler, you probably are popping the fans. As opposed to in WWE, it's about, are you popping the 74-year-old owner, or are you popping nobody? Or mm-hmm. because Vince has done wrestling one way with few exceptions over the course of time. Mm-hmm. And AEW is just this young upstart where it's Tony Khan who has this memory recall saying, go out there, do your thing. And, you know, Vince, you have to have the idea proved through Tony Khan. Any idea that a wrestler has to go through Vince. And if Vince doesn't like the idea, he says no, which automatically we know that we've had work situations where we pitch an idea, the boss doesn't like it. And then we get pouty face and the boss gives us the same idea that we gave him 6 months ago. And he takes it as his own idea. And we have to kind of eat bleep with Tony Khan. He'll get an idea. He might not like it, but he'll trust the performer and yep. go out and execute it, and hopefully it goes well. But I think those are two different philosophies there.
Sarge, real quick, remember how yep. there was that promo when at WrestleMania, this is good, you know? And then obviously the, was it the Brody Lee? This is yep. good. So that's one of the big jokes in wrestling, right? Whenever Vince loves something or maybe created it, this is good, you know?
Right.
And you're right. I think Vince is going for the pop, where AEW is trying it and working it with the arena. And I don't know. I know you guys talked about the Triple H thing last week. I'm not trying to go off track here, but I don't think that was a very good performance. And I think Vince even went kayfabe, which is maybe something we could talk about later on in the show here. It's just two different products right now, completely different.
Yeah, well, the AEW thing, just to touch on that too, like I said, you know, Jon Moxley was not, you know, he had a good match 2 weeks ago. He's your champion, and he had his little video promo here. Now they're talking about going live again, AEW and maybe with an audience in Florida. Chris Jericho commented on it this week too, about everyone getting back to normal with that. It's now it's time to do that, have everyone back in the crowd in a little social distance sense, all that stuff. But the last four shows of AEW have been taped. They were in Georgia mid-March when they taped those there. Tony Khan wrote all those shows. He wrote all those shows, and he produced all those shows. So his creative mindset, as you, as Jimmy was saying a minute ago before, letting the wrestlers and the AEW there kind of do their own creativity, he's signing off on that. That's a big difference right there where Vince is looking for the pop from the old-timer.
And Mike, you mentioned Jericho. It's so much better.
Unbelievable. Isn't it breath of fresh air?
Dude, Bischoff mentioned that. If you listen to the 83 Weeks podcast, he said that that's the one big takeaway that he has is, you know, people, some people love JBL, some don't. But the fact that he's in there and he's telling you what the wrestler's thinking, that gets into the person who's watching it. Jericho, remember that? If you watched it this week, and I'm sorry to go on tangents here, but
no, it's fine.
Did you see Lance Archer this week get on top of the rope and do the catwalk?
Yep.
And he did it a little bit longer than maybe some others that we've seen do the catwalk. He mentioned it, though. Do you know what I mean? He put it in our brain. Right. Oh, yeah, the Undertaker does that. But this guy did it a little bit different. That's what Jericho is great at. WWE doesn't have I'm not disrespecting Graves because I think he's very good, and I think he's the future, actually. But that's what Jericho is great at. That's why AEW is better for the listener, and that's why they're a better product right now, and WWE is boring because they have nobody that can present it to us when Jerry Lawler says something funny and gets criticized for it. Mm-hmm. So... You know,
So Joe, to emphasize your point, Tony Schiavone and Chris Jericho come off as fans of the product.
Yep.
Michael Cole and Corey Graves come off as overproduced. Okay, I have to get my Twitter mentions in. I have to get this thing is coming up next. And Michael Cole has a checklist of things that he has to get in during the match, as opposed to Schiavone and Jericho and Jim Ross and Excalibur. They have their notes, and they can just go. It's all on instinct. And if something does happen, you know, Tony Khan or Cody or whoever's at Gorilla will pop onto their headset through their talkback system and be like, hey, can you mention this? And that's it. There's no Vince McMahon yelling at announcers, because I think that's what ultimately did in Vic Joseph is he couldn't take it. He couldn't take Vince being in his ear all the time.
Hmm. You know what, the way I look at it, we've all been to a press conference before, behind the scenes or whatever. The way I look at it with Tony Schiavone and Chris Jericho, they are like actual sports reporters reporting on the sport. Michael Cole and Corey Graves, they are news reporters reporting on the sport. They're not Mike Lynch, Bob Lobel, John Dennis. They're Chuck Curtis, their Ed Harding, all the news anchor guys, not there from that actual. They don't know so much about how to get it out there to the fans. And that's why Schiavone, Jim Ross, Jericho, they're naturals at it. And that's a much better way to get it out there for a broadcast standpoint.
But it's the whole fan point of view. Schiavone and Jericho come across as fans.
Mauro Ranallo does.
And Corey Graves come across as produced. Except if you watch the UK shows that Michael Cole did or some of the live event things that they've done in the past, Michael Cole is a totally different announcer when he doesn't have Vince in his ear. Totally different.
Mm-hmm.
So like Michael Cole is a fan, but he's also got the chairman chirping in his ear being like, do this, do this, do this.
And I get it.
And we all grew up with Jim Ross yelling and screaming because you know what? Jim Ross is a fan.
Yes.
And that's where he is first. And he takes our excitement. It's the whole Dusty Rhodes thing on Jim Ross's Hall of Fame speech. It's Jim Ross makes you feel pain. He makes you feel emotion. And that was in part why WWE was so successful, is because Jim Ross was sitting there as a legitimate fan broadcasting these events, and you live through his enthusiasm of those events.
100%.
Okay, I think we can move on to our next topic.
Yes.
I love it when we're about to move on, when Joe's on, he just doesn't say anything. I'm like, Joe, you want to say anything else?
No, nope, it's because I won't stop.
I know, it's funny. I like it though.
But just finish off on that. WWE, the guys are doing their jobs. You know, we're in AEW, they want to make it better, and it's better.
Yeah. Yep.
There's a whole radio aspect to this that I've lived that'll be in my book one day of how I transitioned from one sports radio station to 98.5. And I see a lot of similarities in that.
Will it be called Stew Sources?
Yeah.
It might be. I'll give you a little cut of, because nobody will read it. And nobody will sell it. It'll be all giveaway copies, but I'll have, you know, the 15 grand writer's fee in my back pocket.
I'll write the foreword for you if you want.
The hell you will. Michael Hawley will write the foreword.
Yep, I'll definitely buy a copy.
I might send you a freebie.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate it. Yeah, no charge for the search.
Of course. See what I did there, Joe? I put Riley over. I put him in a spot to be successful.
Good job, James.
It's a criticism of mine that I'm well aware of, is I don't put Riley over enough. So I'm putting Riley over. And there's an off-air story that maybe I'll bring to the air at another time that I put Riley over on.
I love you, Jimmy. Go ahead.
All right. So, all right.
How do you transition to that, kid?
Well, to quote the mortgage guy from Alabama, let's keep it going here. Cain Velasquez was released by WWE this week. He signed a multi-year contract with WWE. I wonder if we'll find out that he requested his release. Just something to file away for future reference. There is a report out there that he made backstage mistakes, quote-unquote, backstage mistakes, unquote, including signing a contract with WWE while not telling WWE he was injured. So Cain Velasquez, we know, lost to Brock Lesnar in a WWE championship match in Saudi Arabia last year. And Velasquez would also do a tag team match on a live event from Mexico as well. Part of that tag team match, they defeated him and his partner, defeated the team of Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows. Two matches for what I assume money-wise was a massive contract. So let me start with Joe here. Was Cain Velasquez the biggest bust in WWE history?
So I don't know. I'm gonna say no for right now.
Okay.
But I'll come up with one if I can. I'm gonna say no off the bat. But to back up your point, I read into a little bit. Tom Kaluhu. Not sure if you know who he is.
Never heard of him. But if he's reporting it, I'm good with it.
Okay. He came up.
As you know, Joe, I will take any type of sourcing, any type of reporting, even if it's made up.
There is a dropkick,
and then rip you on a later episode.
Yep. Corey Guns of Dropkick Discussions, he told them, that, to your point, Cain Velasquez had a knee injury, didn't tell WWE, and that's why he was defeated in just 2 minutes in Saudi Arabia. Okay. So the match was cut short because of that. Also, he made three big mistakes that led to some backstage heat. That was one of the things. And I believe the third, he mentioned that he was going to be in the Royal Rumble. WWE didn't announce it, so they pulled him. He also took a picture with Ronda Rousey at WWE headquarters when nobody was supposed to know they were there, and it was made for a catalog. Mm-hmm. So they pulled him, and he was doing things that he wasn't telling WWE. He actually was released before all the big releases happened 2-3 weeks ago. So it just came out this week because they didn't want to, you know, put his name along with the other people. There is a report that they may bring him back at some point. Right now, they've cut the contract. Hmm. So that's from the source that I have. That's the story with Cain Velasquez.
So it's like borderline furlough.
Well, no, they cut him. He's gone. He's not getting.
But you're
paid
saying he might come back though.
They would like to bring him back into a storyline.
Okay,
he'll go to AEW.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Borderline.
He could go to AEW and be the a lucha. You know what I mean? And who knows? Maybe he just be Cain Velasquez. Yeah. Is he the biggest bust? I don't know, because this is just another thing that WWE didn't play right. Mm-hmm. They didn't play the angle of, you know, the guy who beat Brock Lesnar in UFC. They should have built that thing up. Jack Swagger won, what, 3-4 UFC Ultimate Fighting matches? And they made him the number one, like, the great, you know, the most undefeated superstar in the world. They hyped that thing up for 6 months.
Yeah.
Jack Hager.
What did I say, Swagger? Whatever.
Yeah, it's okay. He's always Jack Swagger.
It's fine because Shawn Michaels called Killer Cross.
We the people.
He still calls him Killer Cross, even though it's Karrion Kross.
Joe, I do John Ambrose all the time.
It's fine. But all I'm saying here is, you know, are there other names we could probably bring up? Yes. Did they drop the ball? Absolutely. All I'm saying is don't be surprised if he ever does come back.
Mike, is Cain Velasquez the biggest bust in WWE history?
Absolutely not. He had two stupid matches there, one in Saudi Arabia, one in Mexico. No one was able to see him here in the continental United States. He never had that supposed quote-unquote big moment in WWE. So how can he be a bust? Sure, he can commend, the biggest bust. Let me say this. A lot of hype of him. There's no hiding behind that. But there are other superstars that take the cake on that category of being the biggest bust. And the one that comes to mind for me right there of being the biggest bust, at the top of my head for WWE singles performance, I'd probably have to go, I went with Scott Steiner. I thought that was really bad how everything panned out with him. That Royal Rumble match in Boston, James, I know you were there. I was there. Joe, I don't know if you were there, 03 Royal Rumble. I was ready to fall asleep in that match, the Scott Steiner Triple H match. Just booked so bad. He couldn't do anything right during that time period. So I think it just makes my point of Cain Velasquez, what is the moment you remember him most for in WWE? I can't remember one because he never had that moment. Scott Steiner, I can, because it's not for the right reasons, not for the good reasons. Cain Velasquez, they did royally screw him up. I'm sure he would have had that WrestleMania opportunity if it were to be in Tampa this year. That didn't happen, but I cannot put him as the biggest bust in WWE history.
So Scott Steiner was in my notes as a bigger bust. So I think Cain Velasquez is the biggest bust in WWE history, just to be clear.
Okay.
I had Scott Steiner on in my notes because the hype, the years, what could Vince McMahon do with the big bad booty daddy? So Steiner shows up at the O2 Survivor Series. They have both Raw and SmackDown chasing, trying to sign his services. And then Raw signs him because Scott Steiner couldn't close with Stephanie McMahon, who was the SmackDown GM at the time. Bischoff was the Raw GM. So in storyline, he signs with Raw. He gets the championship match in Boston at the Rumble. Terrible match. One of the worst matches I've ever seen live. Then Steiner wins the match by DQ. Triple H beats Steiner clean at No Way Out. And then Scott Steiner did nothing. And he didn't even finish out his contract with WWE. He signed a 3-year deal. And so that's why Scott Steiner was on my list of busts. Two other busts, if I may. I could make a case that the acquisition of WCW was a bust from an on-camera standpoint.
That might be the greatest one.
Well, the greatest one is the angle, right? The WCW.
The invasion angle.
The invasion. It was so bad.
But here's why it's a footnote is because Vince made a ton of money off of that library and is still making money off of that library. So while a storyline bust, the invasion was financially huge success, huge success. The other one was Lex Luger and the Lex Express.
I had that one on my top five.
Vince McMahon saw Lex Luger as the next Hulk Hogan. And that bus tour, the slam of Yokozuna on the USS Intrepid, which, by the way, they have the whole 4 hours of that on the WWE Network. The Lex Express, the US Intrepid, all that stuff. It's actually a fascinating skim. Right. Don't watch the whole thing. Just kind of skim around at different points.
Yeah.
But watching him go through the Lex Express stuff is fascinating. It was fascinating to me because at that time in my life, I'm like, oh, Lex Luger's coming to Boston. Well, where is he coming to Boston? And I never found out.
Right.
But there's this point where they're showing the bus tour and it's going down towards 93 South towards Quincy, but it never stops anywhere. So it's like it's just traveling through. Which, by the way, Fox was going to do a bus tour, and they never did for the promotion of SmackDown, but that's a digression.
Oh, that's right.
So I wonder, though, if Lex Luger becomes a success if he actually beat Yokozuna at SummerSlam in 1993. Maybe he has a more successful run as WWF champion. We'll never know. But they wanted to keep it on Yoko. They thought that people would anticipate Luger winning the title at a later point in time. But here's what happened. He loses to Yoko at SummerSlam. He ties Bret Hart to win the 94 Royal Rumble. And with all due respect to Lex Luger, which means I really don't respect him at all, Bret Hart was going to win a fan popularity contest because the WWF audience has known Bret Hart since 1984, 85, 86.
Right.
They just met Lex Luger a year ago.
Yeah.
And that's something that may have sabotaged Ric Flair's success and Flair and Hogan at WrestleMania 8, but that's another digression. On a personal note, I think that Lex should have beaten Yokozuna at WrestleMania 10 and then lost to Brett. But the reason, of course, it didn't happen is because Vince doesn't like good guys versus bad. He likes good guys versus bad guys, not good guy versus good guy.
Good guy. Yeah. And I think that's where, I mean, I'll give him go. He should have won at SummerSlam 93. That's the match I thought he should have had it there. And then, you know, he was still that major. He was in the main event at the Survivor Series 93, the captain of the All-American teams. Yeah. So that was still a lot of hype for him there at that moment. Lex is a good one. Can I give you two other guys I had on my list too, just if you don't mind, real quick, for the bust for WWE? Diamond Dallas Page. I thought he was booked really bad in the WWE.
The Stalker.
That was awful. Terrible.
The Stalker angle was good, though, I thought.
No, I thought it was terrible, Joe. It was creepy. No, I didn't like it. He was freaking attacking someone's wife, and like, you're going to promote that on a quote-unquote family-friendly program where we put smiles on faces? How can you do that? Are you kidding me? And I love DDP. But no, you can't do that. That is terrible. And that was right after the invasion angle. They booked that so damn bad. It was awful. Another guy, too. I was
there's
a little...
Spot.
Yeah, yeah. And another guy, too. I mean, he eliminated The Undertaker at the 93 Royal Rumble, had a terrible match with him at WrestleMania 9, Giant Gonzalez. Giant Gonzalez. That was just... Oh, they had so much hope for him. Be that, like, you know, post-Andre era. He had that stupid fake muscle suit. Came out of the basket. It just didn't work. It was not good. Undertaker is still, according to Bruce Pritchard, still angry about that WrestleMania 9 match there with Giant Gonzalez. Oh, I don't blame him. So there you go. Those are a couple guys on my list.
I had three. I had Dr. Death, Steve Williams. Yep. I had Kerry Von Erich, the Texas Tornado. I thought he was booked well. Crowd loved him. Obviously, he had his family issues and everything like that, and his own problems.
It's a great documentary on the Dark Side of the Ring.
Yeah, he won the Intercontinental Championship.
Beat Mr. Perfect. Mr. Perfect as a last minute replacement.
And then what happened? Like, where did he go?
Had a drug issue, and then had to drop it back to him on Superstars Wrestling Challenge, one of those shows.
So that was one, and then I just put Mabel in there because I thought, you know, it was funny how like he was supposed to be the third man and.
You want to talk about, Mabel was never supposed to be the third man, Joe Murray, but good 83 weeks reference.
That's what I'm going with. Like, I just thought at least, like, there were high hopes for Mabel, right? Men on a Mission. And you know who I think sucks?
I loved Men on a Mission.
I'm just going to bring this up because he's not a superstar. The Sin Cara act, right? And rest in peace. But this Sin Cara act. It's just, there's like two of them and like, you know, how many times can we get this Mexican superstar to come in here or whatever? It's just, it's never worked. Never worked. What was the little guy? What was the little one's name? That recently, a couple of years ago, they had like a little guy with them.
Let me look it up here.
What was his name?
I don't know.
They try to put all these guys over and it never works.
Someone's yelling through their thing, but whatever. I know what you mean. It doesn't work. You're right. It doesn't work. It's not worth our time even talking about it. So move on.
Okay, then. Money in the Bank comes to us next week, May 10th, Mother's Day. Mother's Day for Money in the Bank. I will not be in the front row for this show although actually Florida is opening up on Monday, May 4th. So most of you will be listening today. Florida is opening up and you can run 25% capacity of the building. So interesting to see if WWE lets fans in. If they do some adjustments. But that's a topic for another time, and we'll see and we'll react and we'll rip WWE for doing it wrong, even though they've been doing a lot of things right during this pandemic.
And by the way, James, you will not be front row, but this is the second straight year. Money in the Bank main event will be in the state of Connecticut.
This is true. This is true.
Good for Connecticut.
So Money in the Bank preview. This is where we're going to – and Mike, we might as well start with you. What match are you most looking forward to on Sunday for Money in the Bank?
I mean, again, it's been tough for me to really get into this pay-per-view, but seeing that...
Joe Murray, so Mike's not interested in the match.
Hold on. The fact that this is going to be at Titan Tower, I'm like, okay, now this is going to be cool. After seeing what they did with the Boneyard match, where I got ripped by a lot of people saying that was my favorite match, mostly anticipated match going into WrestleMania, I'm in. on the women's Money in the Bank match. I think this has so much potential here for the future storyline of Becky Lynch, of who she will go up against, or possibly Bayley. We'll see. But I think you're looking at Asuka, and I also like Shayna Baszler to come out as your two big winners in this one here. And
so you're predicting a tie?
Well, it's a coin toss, but I'm leaning more on Shayna Baszler because I just look at it because, you know, they had so much. There was a big build up there going into WrestleMania. They really want to have that crowd again for Becky and Shayna Baszler, and I think they want to put the title on Shayna Baszler. That's why I like her in this match. But I'm so excited to see this outside on the roof of Titan Tower here with all of these athletes, the way they perform and everything, and to see what they're able to do on a different stage. I'm in on this. And don't sleep on Carmella sneaking a win in this one also. She needs a title, I think. And she had that final spot with the win over Mandy Rose. So that might be a little momentum, but I'm going to go Shayna Baszler as the favorite to win this.
As someone who watches every single week, I still don't know who's in the match.
Here, I'll tell you right now.
And I'm not being fresh. I'm being a little cheeky, but
Asuka, Shayna Baszler, Nia Jax, Dana Brooke, Lacey Evans, Carmella.
Okay, but like, have they been really pumping this up?
No, like, but
I mean, that's what I'm trying to say. There's a women's match and a men's match, and it's going to happen at the same time. And like, to me, there hasn't been enough storytelling for me to root for somebody. Who am I rooting for? Who is Dana Brooke getting the push? Because it looks like it. You know what I mean? Like, in who is it? Lacey Evans? She's in it, right? Okay, yeah, I like Lacey Evans. Give me Lacey Evans because, you know, she's a lady. I met her, and like, I'm gonna root for her. But I'm looking back in the past because you guys know me. I like to look at trends and things to that degree. Carmella won the first one, right? Two time.
Yep. And the second one.
And then Alexa Bliss won. Yep. Neither cashed in. So Bayley won and is now obviously the champ.
Wait. So Carmella cashed in on Charlotte.
Sorry.
After WrestleMania in New Orleans, one of the most horrific nights in wrestling history.
Let's be accurate here.
And then Alexa Bliss won in Chicago and cashed in on Nia Jax during the Ronda Rousey Nia Jax match during Money in the Bank.
Oh, I apologize. Then, all three women cashed in.
Yes, successfully.
Yes, I did.
Yes.
And then that evil Bayley, like, what a scoundrel.
What a moment. That was awesome.
After Charlotte
fights
tooth and nail with Becky Lynch, winning her ninth women's championship, and Bayley, that horrible coward, she comes in out of nowhere. She doesn't even let her get to her feet to defend herself properly. And cashes in and then smugly celebrates in my face. Get out of here.
That was awesome. Bayley, great moment. Maybe the moment of her career right there. Good job, Bayley.
She sucks. Anyway. So who's she gonna challenge? Right? Is that what it comes down to? What can WWE write to make something to interest Joe Murray against Bayley? What can you give me? So rattle off the contestants again here, Mike.
Yep,
we got Lacey Evans.
Yeah, Lacey Evans, Carmella.
Okay, Carmella, I love her. Okay, we go boys. Nope. Go ahead.
Okay, Dana Brooke.
All right, she's getting a push, but it doesn't move the needle.
Nia Jax.
Can she climb the ladder? I hope so. I'm rooting for that thing.
That's your winner.
I want Nia to climb that ladder.
Okay.
Climb that rope.
Okay, Asuka.
Oh, grab that rope. Asuka, can we go? Do we need another Asuka angle, though? Like,
it's only a matter of time before she goes to NXT. A matter of time. And then Shayna Baszler. That's what I'm saying. I'm excited to see Shayna Baszler and Becky Lynch. I want that again.
The thing with Baszler, though, right?
Yep.
Like, do they want to put it on her right away? Is this something you want to do with force?
No, but she'll have the title, and you have that anticipation. She can cash in on Becky at any time, and I'm in on that.
That's what
I want.
Oh, yeah.
That's what I want. I'm excited for that.
But I would like a Nia Jax only for the simple fact that Baszler and Jax, that's like a good little side story to Becky Lynch. Because right now, right? No Seth Rollins, no Becky Lynch for a briefcase. So if you can give me another storyline, I'm in on that.
Yeah.
again, Nia Jax can
win this.
But again, Jimmy, they haven't developed a story for me to care or watch.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Everybody's like, yeah, we're having this quarterfinals match to have somebody. And it's like, where's the storyline here? And like, what, they're going to cash in on either Bayley or Becky? So maybe that's where they're going with it, is maybe you can cash in on Becky.
Joe, I want you to send an email. It's bpritchard@wwecorp.com.
This is
good job, James.
Nia Jax is winning the women's scavenger hunt. That's what's happening. Is this scavenger hunt through WWE corporate headquarters? Nia Jax is winning, and she's going to destroy everything in her path. And I still think that they should let the men and the women release the hounds at the same time. And now this is your mini movie, and it's going to take up the next 45 minutes to an hour. And you're going to have different. You'll have the men get to the top at one time, and you'll have the women get to the top at a different time. But they have the opportunity with this match, and it's already in the can, supposedly, to do something really different, really fun, really unique. I'm looking forward to both matches. So the match that I picked was the men's Money in the Bank. And here's your talent roster, right? It's Daniel Bryan. I'm in on. He's won it once. Rey Mysterio, who's still in the company. Cool. Aleister Black, who I think is the favorite. And the reason I think he's the favorite and I think he's going to win it, even though I don't want him to win it, is because the internet reported that Aleister Black was the runner-up to win the Royal Rumble before they went with Drew McIntyre. So Aleister Black loves Paul Heyman. Paul Heyman loves Aleister Black. So I think that's going to be your winner. King Corbin, who I actually think should win this match because you have no crowds. King Corbin, Baron Corbin's your best villain right now. Like, pure authentic villain, as in the fans who aren't there anyway don't know how to react to him, so they'll just viscerally hate it. Versus Otis, who I think Otis winning would be a lot of fun, because then you could have Mandy Rose be the gold digger on Otis, versus what was originally Apollo Crews is now TBD, which is interesting because I want to know who TBD is.
Oh, come on.
Because TBD could be somebody really interesting. I don't think it's Kevin Owens, although Kevin Owens should be the pick, because Kevin Owens should be the Money in the Bank winner, but he's got an ankle injury apparently. Yeah. So TBD is interesting, but there's at least a little bit of a story into getting into this match. I think Aleister Black's going to win. I don't necessarily want that. I want Otis to win because I like the Otis Mandy Rose story. I think it's very simple. Otis just has such like good charisma, timing. He's got enough athletic prowess. He does enough in the ring where he's good enough. And Mandy eventually, I think, is going to turn on him. And that makes her the number one villain woman in the company, I think.
And doesn't TBD make sense to be Dolph Ziggler with Otis there and Mandy and that whole storyline? Wouldn't it make sense?
No.
Really? Okay. I just thought for a storyline purpose.
So I'll be honest, I'd never heard anywhere about the Kevin Owens injury. So you only heard it.
Yeah, it just happened this week.
Wrestling Inside the Ropes. So,
well, excuse me, just announced this week.
But TBD has to be the consideration. And plus, if you win this, you can only go at the SmackDown champion. Is that correct? Or can you go after both Raw?
I think the brand you're on, right?
Yeah.
They make up rules every week, right?
It's pro wrestling. They can do whatever they want. Like, I would be more interested, like, if Shayna Baszler came out, if Shayna Baszler wins, right, and just shows up on SmackDown and just chokes out Bayley, like, great. Yeah. Put Shayna Baszler on SmackDown if you don't want Shayna Baszler beating Becky Lynch. Fine, no problem.
Charlotte Flair wins the Royal Rumble. She chooses whatever title she wants to go after. Similar thing right here. You do whatever you want.
No. Rhea Ripley chose Charlotte Flair.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's how it worked.
However, the champion can always
choose the winner of the Royal Rumble, because that storyline made so much sense.
But again, here you go. They go with the rules however they want to go with them. That's my point. You're making my point.
And just going,
Charlotte's matches have been top notch, by the way. Thank you.
Oh my God. Everyone. Mia Yim this week, she put Mia Yim over big time. Good job.
She's been excellent. Charlotte.
Unbelievable.
Awesome.
Unbelievable.
This isn't a love Charlotte fest. It's just
agreed.
Week in and week out.
Not that I have daily on loving Charlotte. I'm in.
Okay.
No, so, but I mean, it's true. It did. Yeah.
Money in the Bank winners: Seth Rollins cashed, Sheamus cashed, Dean Ambrose, John Moxley cashed. Corbin didn't, Strowman didn't, but he's the champ. And then Lesnar cashed. You need a big name like that to win. So, to me, like, are there any big names? It's not Mysterio. So, like, I just feel like if they're going to put a winner, it needs to be someone that will that could fail and still be successful, or win and get the push. So, I think Aleister Black's the guy. I think Kevin Owens is your best choice.
Yep.
But TBD has me very interested.
Yep. So, Joe, the Money in the Bank match that interests you most is?
Oh, Bray Wyatt versus Braun Strowman. There's no doubt about it. The black sheep, the mask, the storyline there, the family, how he got into it. This is storytelling, and this is what they do at WWE that's best, especially when it comes to Bray Wyatt. So, A, is this going to be a match? B, is this going to be some sort of movie that they make? If Bray loses but looks good, they can do that. If, like, to me, you know, as we discussed, Bray Wyatt beats John Cena, supposedly, in a match. I think that happened. And then, obviously, Kevin Owens beats Seth Rollins, but Seth Rollins gets the... So, like, there's a lot, like, going on here. But I think Bray can lose and still be Bray and do his thing. I don't think they're taking the title off of Braun Strowman whatsoever. I just think that this is going to be a storyline that continues. And I'm just throwing stuff out there. We all read and we all like things. But I feel like somebody else is going to be added to the Wyatt family. I feel like it's coming. And this is just a Joe take. This isn't me. I feel like eventually we're going to see Bo Dallas as a part of the Wyatt family. He wasn't released. We know that Curtis Axel was, you know, they had a thing going for a while. He was moved on from this week. Still wondering if he's officially eliminated from the Rumble. But all I'm saying,
2014 Rumble, just to be specific.
Specific, because he should have won. but I just feel like maybe that's another angle here. I don't think Braun's going to lose to Bray. It's not going to happen. But how can they continue this story? Maybe an interference from another family member from the Wyatt side.
And trying to get
the black sheep over. I'm just coming up with storylines that will interest me, and I'm just throwing the name of Bo Dallas out there. So that match interests me the most because it has the best storytelling, and I think Bray Wyatt's must-see TV.
All right, two things Money in the Bank related. Well, actually, let me comment on that. I think Braun Strowman retains. I don't think Bray Wyatt needs the championship. I think he's well-established, and they're selling the replica belt. So I think they're good on that end for now.
Mm-hmm.
And Strowman let's see what Strowman can do with the title. Let's keep it on him for a little while and see what he does. And maybe this is a case where Andre the Giant should have never been the world champion.
Yeah.
Braun Strowman should have never been the universal champion, but let's see what happens, because we're in a case where, like, I don't know, Braun Strowman's good to the kids. He's good to the kids. So why not give it a shot? Why not? Mike, do you have a thought on this before I move on?
No, I'm all in on Braun. I hope he wins. I think he retains. But absolutely. But I do have one thing on the guy that I'm not a honk on is your boy Seth Rollins, if you don't mind. Please, his match with Drew McIntyre.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was my transition.
Oh, go ahead. Well, yeah. But my thought on Drew McIntyre, just a thought on him.
So Drew McIntyre is defending the WWE Championship against Seth Rollins at Money in the Bank. Mike, go.
Yes. Okay. So I just really thought about this today. Drew McIntyre, he has not been put into a good situation by WWE. And let me tell you why real quick. What he had to do at the Royal Rumble, not an easy thing to do, especially as a face. Now, I think it's fantastic how he was able to get the crowd over and get everyone in your favor and then get you to that main event story there at WrestleMania. Now, at that time, you think you're going to have a crowd there for you at WrestleMania. Turns out you're not. So you beat Brock Lesnar. That's awesome. But here's where it gets a little tricky for Drew McIntyre. Here he is as your champion. And Seth Rollins has been in that position before. But can Drew McIntyre continue to carry the flag? And can he continue to carry that momentum for when that time comes, when fans do return to arenas? Because will he still be over? Will they still be cheering for him? Or will they be like, oh boy, you know, I could get no reaction to him when he won, you know, at WrestleMania, or even retained against Seth Rollins at Money in the Bank. how am I going to root for this guy? It can go either really good or really bad. And I think he's in a tough situation for how he has to, you know, steer the waters here going on out, where he's never been in this position before. So I give him a lot of credit, but I just hope that everyone, they keep him as the babyface and everyone stays on his side there for when the fans do return. I don't know. I just thought about that today. I'm like, this is a tough spot for him. Not an easy thing.
I thought the Drew promo was outstanding against Seth Rollins.
He's been great on the mic.
But he thinks, he says all the stuff we say on this podcast. Mm-hmm. Like, Drew went right at him.
Good. Thank God.
I think
he listens. Hi, Drew.
Hey, Drew. anyway, I'm interested in the match. My only thing is this. Can Seth, the Monday Night Messiah, lose again? And what's that do for him?
Oh, I hope so.
I mentioned he's putting over the Razor and the whatever the guy's name is. And then Murphy came in. Is there someone else now? Like, I just feel like Seth's putting people over now. And, you know, can he continue to get buried? Because I think he's done everything he's been asked. He's achieved everything that he can. We've talked about this week in and week out. This is Drew's time, though.
Mm-hmm.
I'd really like to see this Drew-Seth thing carry on for a little while longer. And, like, I'd love to see them in, like, a steel cage or something. You know, like, nobody in here. These two go at it. Just, it's an interesting match. It's just that I'm happy for Drew. I love what Drew should have been on the list for bus if he didn't win the championship, right?
Yeah.
He should have been on that bus. I'm just curious where the storyline can go if Seth Rollins loses and they continue to have Drew McIntyre as the champion.
Easy spot. Get a guy like Jinder Mahal in there. Same size, easy to be a heel, good storytelling. Mm-hmm. They know each other well. Put him right there with Drew McIntyre.
Get Heath Slater back.
Yeah, it's something like just the same size, and they know each other well, like I said, and it would work.
Hey, Jimmy, real quick before you go. The TBD train is rocking in my brain. Have we forgotten about AJ Styles at all?
He's going to come back on Raw tomorrow night.
Oh, he is, but tomorrow night? Okay, I didn't know that.
Or tonight, if you're listening to it on Monday, he'll be on Raw.
Sorry to switch things here. My mind's rolling.
No, it's okay. Don't worry about it. If we go a little bit longer, Mike can bill for another hour, so I'm all for it.
So wait a minute. No, I only do three. But wait a minute. AJ, he didn't die? He didn't get buried by the Undertaker? What?
No. True? His hand was up.
Oh, right. That's right. Yeah, it's a movie. That's right. It's a movie.
At Bruce Pritchard? Was that what it was again, the Twitter handle?
ePritchard@WWEcorp.com.
Okay, there we go.
Oh, but you know who did die in WWE real life were Gallows and Anderson.
They're out.
Yeah.
Out.
I'm just, sorry. In their story.
Not very happy about that.
No.
But to address your point, Joe, about Seth Rollins putting everybody over, this is historically how Vince McMahon has operated. You go for, and the example that I always use is King Kong Bundy, God rest his soul. WrestleMania 2, he's main eventing against Hulk Hogan. The next year, he's in a multi-person match at WrestleMania 3, third match from the opener against Hillbilly Jim, right? So what Vince does is he pushes you to the, actually more recently, AJ Styles. He was the WWE champion for how long? And then he goes into a 50-50 booking program with Kevin Owens. But that's the WWE formula, is they go to the top. Brock Lesnar. Why did Brock Lesnar leave the WWE the first time around? Because he was asked to put other people over and he didn't want to do it. And travel and this, that, and the other thing. Whatever. But that's the WWE philosophy, is they push you to the moon and then you have to return the favors. Or sometimes you come in as a WCW guy like Chris Jericho and you have to lose on 14 straight pay-per-views or 14 out of 16 pay-per-views because you're a WCW guy and nobody likes that you're actually talented and good. But that's a whole other thing. Mike Riley, do you have a lightning round for us?
Let's go real quick here. Let's bang this one out. There was an interview this week. Speaking of Ring of Honor, Marty Scurll this week. He was on the Ring of Honor Strong podcast. And he mentioned about Ring of Honor possibly doing work with AEW down the line. Will that happen sooner than later, gentlemen?
I don't think it will, because it doesn't benefit AEW. I think Marty has a great relationship with Cody and the Young Bucks and all that stuff, but I don't see AEW being interested in working with Ring of Honor in this case. Joe?
I think down the line, you know, and I still think they're open about the relationship of, oh, I saw this guy in Japan. They talk about it often. I think it's continuing. It's about continuing to build the AEW brand. So, Sarge, is it something that could happen down the line? Yes. Right now, I think AEW is worried about itself.
Okay. The women's evolution has come such a long way here. So, you know, obviously from the valets to the divas, now to superstars. What or who do you think was the turning point for women in the WWE?
I would say it was the NXT match with Emma and Paige, I think it was.
Oh, yeah.
That was the first one where they actually had like a really athletic contest. I think the one that got featured was Natty Neidhart against Charlotte Flair.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you push forward to the main roster, it's probably the main roster debuts of Becky, Charlotte, and Sasha Banks in that three-way women's program where Stephanie's in the ring and introducing them. And then a big part of that was the transition of Nikki Bella into a workable performer and then dropping the title to Charlotte. And then the original Becky versus Charlotte story heading into WrestleMania 32 in Dallas. So I think that was the turning point.
Yeah, Mania 32 for me there as well. Joe, how about yourself?
I would say Mania 32, but I think like would kind of put it over for me. You know, like I hate to use the movie and I saw the movie, but like when Paige beat Nikki Bella, yeah, that kind of like got me into it a little bit there. And then they started doing things like, what was it? The Alexa Bliss, Mickie James, Trish Stratus, Lita, like that started to get into things a little bit. And I know that, you know, years ago it was the whole, you know, the four horsewomen and what was going to come up and all these girls. But like, remember we were in Boston and Charlotte in that Money in the Bank cage match. Was that Money in the Bank?
Hell in a Cell.
Hell in a Cell.
That was great.
Yep.
I will say this. I like where the women's division's going, and I like what they're doing with Charlotte. If AEW could capitalize on getting another star, I think it really could be something. And maybe leaning on like a, you know, someone that's experienced that might not be wrestling right now could be a good move for them, a la Dustin Rhodes. Or I'm not bringing up a Mickey James name or anything like that, but to that type of person.
I'm not sure. Like Chris Statlander has the talent. I'm not sure people are going to buy in on her alien gimmick, yeah, but I could be wrong.
All right. Two more real quick. What is your favorite wrestling theme song of all time? Go. Who wants it?
I love No Chance in Hell.
Lightning Run. Oh, No Chance in Hell. Okay.
I love No Chance in Hell.
No chance. That's what you got. Up against a machine too strong. Pretty politicians buying souls for run song puppets.
Yep.
The whole crowd sings it. You know what's happening. We know the storyline behind it. There's so many that when you asked, boom, that was the one.
Okay, Jimmy.
Mike, I'll go last. I'm interested in yours.
Seth Rollins. No, I'm kidding.
Burn it down.
Yes, it's not a bad one. I actually like John Cena's, and a very close second is Randy Orton for me. But I'm going to go John Cena.
So all time for me is Real American.
Oh, good one.
Hulk Hogan's Real American, Rick Derringer. Shout out to Demolition's theme song as well. Currently, it's Chris Jericho's Judas.
Oh, that's a damn good one.
Yep. Everybody sings.
You are beautiful on the inside. You are innocent personified. And I will drag you down and sell you out. Run away. I am cold like December snow. I am hard out this
finally, favorite piece of wrestling merchandise that you own. This is great. Let me tell you mine while you guys look around.
We're all looking around, right?
Yeah. We're all looking around.
Let me pull mine up right here. It's actually on camera too.
Well, while you're doing that there quickly, I have a Hulk Hogan autographed in front of me, ripping off a shirt. I have a signed Eric Bischoff, Conrad Thompson, Bruce Pritchard, 83 weeks, something to wrestle with.
I'm sorry, Joe.
No, and you guys have way more than me. And I have a no charge from the Sarge, WCW small wristband belt from the Sarge.
There you go.
Autographed by Dolph Ziggler.
No, it's not WCW. It's a world heavyweight title.
Oh, sorry. Sorry.
Yeah, but it was in WCW originally, yeah. Undertaker urn, signed by him right there. Look at that.
Brother Sarge!
Look at that. Plays really well on an audio podcast.
Well, we're on video with Joe's thing, so maybe he'll show it, too.
I know. So mine is a ticket stub.
Yeah.
And it is from Tuesday, December 29th, 1998. It is a Raw's War taping. The section is 329, row B, seat 15. $20 for the ticket. Worcester Centrum Center was the location. I was there with my mom, my dad, and my friend Paul. And that night, we saw Mick Foley win the world championship.
Wow. Nice.
That's and a good one. So that's the ticket stub that I have.
Love it.
And I'm showing them on the video thing. And then next to it is a photo of Mick holding the title from that night, signed by Mick Foley.
Love it.
And that is my favorite piece of wrestling memorabilia.
Folks, I have three things that maybe you guys would have. I don't know. But I have a WrestleMania 36 Tampa Bay, three T-shirts. Three.
You know,
two black ones and a gray one. I was there, everybody.
Well, they were selling the chairs to that. And I have a chair collection too. If you can see right above me there, those are my latest chairs. I bought one this week, Backlash 03 from someone. But yeah, that's my new thing with the championship belts as well. My collections, but the Undertaker urn, it has my favorite one.
So if you're asking me like belts that I have,
yeah, good.
My favorite one is the ECW Taz belt.
We can see it in the camera behind you.
And it's not the FTW one. It's the, when Taz won the world title, it's the ECW one that they sell on WWE shop right now, except there's a difference. And the difference is on the main center plate, that the one that they sell currently doesn't say Taz on it. Mine does.
Oh, is there, nice. That's
is
cool.
There, is there something in the archives where people can hear you guys talk about the best wrestling belts or anything like that?
Maybe no, but if you go to adfreeshows.com on their Patreon, you can hear Conrad talk about his collection.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe you guys could try it as well.
Yeah, give it a shot. Sure. So there you go. That was pretty fun, huh?
So there's the Mike Riley lightning round match of the week. So originally I had a match picked from May 2nd of 2005. It was a Monday Night Raw. It was in Boston. It was Shawn Michaels against Shelton Benjamin, which the super kick you see on the WWE signature video all the time. But that match was actually fabulous. But my actual match, it sparked my interest because WWE Network released The Untold Story of Triple H, I Am the Game, and the origins of it and the transitions through it. But what it does is it features Mick Foley, Triple H, and Stephanie McMahon talking about the Triple H Cactus Jack program that led to their match at Madison Square Garden at the Royal Rumble in 2000. Now, the Royal Rumble that night, top to bottom, that pay-per-view was fabulous. But the match, that the street fight that Mick, Cactus Jack, and Triple H had is one of my all-time favorite matches, and you know that I'm a Mick Foley honk.
Yep.
And Mick, in this, calls it the biggest match of his career. It's Madison Square Garden. It's Mrs. Foley's baby boy. It's Cactus Jack, the wrestler that got put on the mat. And I was so emotionally charged. And even though Mick had three runs as WWE champion under the Mankind WWE WWF mask, I thought that they might put it on him. But when Cactus Jack lost, I'm like, he's going to retire. Like, that's got to be it for him because there's nothing else. And then they came back for the Hartford Hell in a Cell match, which I don't think it was as good because it it became, if you watch it enough, it becomes predictable, like with anything else. And I think part of the emotion for me and why I love that street fight in Madison Square Garden was because I was just a Mick Foley honk. And I go hot and cold on Triple H. If Triple H doesn't have Mick Foley putting him over, Triple H might take a little bit longer to get where he ultimately got to. But he was being positioned by that because JR on his podcast said that Triple H was one of the early million-dollar makers for downside guarantees. And that was before he got the world title. So that's something interesting to kind of – he was going to make it whether we wanted him as fans to or not. But that sequence of matches really cemented Triple H as a main event guy. Of course, his winning at WrestleMania 2000 was the one that really put him over the top. The first time a villain walked out of WrestleMania as the champion.
Mm. I'm so glad you said that with the, Jim Ross and so forth, for Mick Foley, rather, to put him over like that. If Foley doesn't do it, we may not get the Triple H like that. Because I mentioned it last week here, too, when we talked about Triple H. But still, as a fan, the narc in me, so mad about that Hell in the Cell in Hartford. The street fight match in Madison Square Garden. I thought he got freaking buried by Triple H. And I'm like, no, he does not deserve this. I was furious that Triple H did that or won like that. Now, again, it's me, you know.
Wait, you thought Triple H buried Mick?
Well, it didn't. It just didn't feel like I don't think Triple H did it intentionally. I think the company kind of buried him. Mm-hmm. I think Foley deserved better. He deserved to have won one of those, you know, even let him win at WrestleMania. You know, he lost three in a row like that. That was awful. I was furious about that.
Hey, Jimmy, do you have something against Triple H matches?
And then he comes back. He became the commissioner, thank God. That was huge. But I was mad about that.
Yeah, Triple H thinks he's Ric Flair, and he's not. And he's not as great as he thinks he is and as WWE history is trying to make him out to be. Like the Ruthless Aggression era, like where Triple H was part of Evolution.
They made it like Hell in a Cell, idea, right? They made it
like Hell in a Cell, 56 minutes with Shawn Michaels was a terrible match. Yeah. A terrible match. He had a terrible match with Booker T, who is worldly renowned as a good performer.
Yep.
Triple H on the Mania of WrestleMania, the documentary on WrestleMania 19, the year after WrestleMania 19, called Booker T a hit or miss worker. And if we go through the resume of Triple H on the big platforms, Royal Rumble, the one that we were at in Boston in 2003 that we talked about earlier, terrible match. Triple H had another stinker in Boston, Survivor Series 08 against Victor Kozlov. If Edge doesn't do a cash-in of factitious money in the bank during that match, like that goes down as the single worst match in wrestling history that I've ever seen live.
Batista Triple H at WrestleMania
in New York was terrible.
That was the worst.
Seth Rollins versus Triple H in Orlando was terrible.
I do want to say that I think the most important WrestleMania in Triple H's career, the most important one, WrestleMania 14 in Boston. He beats Owen Hart. Shawn Michaels loses to Mike Tyson, and the night after, he becomes the leader of DX. That pivoted him to that next level there, and then he was off to the races as a main event guy.
I think he's a great character, great transformation.
Yeah, but Jimmy's right about like a Ric Flair wannabe, and he's not.
Yeah, like the whole falling thing, you know.
Yeah,
there was about an 18 to 24 month stretch where Triple H was the premier worker.
Sure.
in the business, but it's not 25 years where he was the premier worker. It was 18 to 24 months.
Yeah, I still...
And that seems to get lost in... That seems to get lost. And then if you want to do the matching up of opponents, like, so WrestleMania in New Orleans, it's a tag match, right? And everybody's amped up for Ronda Rousey's first appearance. And Triple H sold his ass off for Ronda Rousey to make her special.
That was
and
great.
Important. Yep. And that was fabulous work.
We watched the
WrestleMania
together.
32 in Dallas.
Roman Reigns.
The crowd, we were all worn out. We were all tired.
Yep.
He doesn't need to go 30 minutes with Roman Reigns.
No.
33 against Seth Rollins, just everybody went up and got to the bathroom after Seth Rollins lit the stage on fire. Let's see, 31 was against Sting.
Oh my God, that was the worst of all time.
And that was just a pig orgy, right? Yep. Like it was cool seeing all the NWO and the.
But
he had to beat Sting, right? Mm-hmm. WrestleMania 30 in New Orleans. He's in the ring with Daniel Bryan. Mm-hmm. Like all three of us could get in the ring with Daniel Bryan and we would have good matches. Right? We all agree on that?
I put him in the
I'll take Daniel Bryan, but okay.
All right, WrestleMania 29. Name me one. First of all, name me his opponent at WrestleMania 29 and don't Google it.
I don't know. I don't know. Seriously, I can't think of
went
off my head.
Went on second to last.
Well, CM Punk fought The Undertaker. Cena fought The Rock.
Yep. What was the match in the middle?
Orton?
Did he fight? Was it Randy Orton?
It was Brock Lesnar. He beat Brock Lesnar.
How does that happen? Like
because he's Triple H. He's
I know, and that's what I'm saying. That's garbage.
They had the 25-year thing last week on SmackDown 2 weeks ago. Which I thought was terrible. But the one thing I did take away is, was there something with Shawn Michaels in Triple H there? Hey, you have a 25th anniversary. I don't. Hey, look at all the WrestleMania losses that you had in your career. I'm Mr. WrestleMania.
Shawn's got a lot of WrestleMania losses too, by the way.
He's not Mr. WrestleMania. That's a terrible nickname.
But I think he'd admit that. But yeah. Triple H had 13 losses.
I think Shawn's got 12 or 13.
Sounds right. You can go down the list on that.
Just that's what I was going to say about Mania. Shawn Michaels would be considered one of the greatest wrestlers of all time.
He's the greatest in-ring performer I've ever seen in my life.
Compared to Triple H, Triple H did put people over, but there's definitely a time when he was getting put over when he shouldn't have. No doubt.
Yeah.
So that's a long Triple H rant.
Which
I could do 4 hours.
You know what
on
though?
Triple H
I'm a listener. I listen to you guys every week. You guys have these weird like. Undertaker, Triple H, and you didn't like it. It sounds to me like Mike loves The Undertaker, and you don't like Triple H.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
And
keep calling Adam Cole short. Yeah, that's good for business. Oh, I shouldn't have said that. Oh, well.
There'll be a lot of editing today.
No. I'll leave the Adam Cole one in there. Because Adam Cole is one of the best performers in the world, and he's continually reminded about how short he is. Well, you know what, Triple H? If you were 5'10", and not 6'4" and able to avoid the wellness policy, you wouldn't be in your spot either.
I like it.
That'll come back to bite me in the ass in a few years. Mike Riley, what was your match of? Match you want the listeners to watch?
Yeah. So speaking of Triple H, the guy that he handpicked here was Kevin Owens against John Cena in 2015 at the Elimination Chamber. I was suggested to watch this match from a good friend of our show, Chris, who listens every week. He sent me a tweet and he said, I think you should watch this one. I said, okay, I can do that. So Kevin Owens came in as the NXT champion. First match on the main roster at the time for WWE, fought John Cena, who was U.S. champion. Title's not on the line. A lot of buildup on this one, and it was so cool to go back and listen to it because they were consistently putting over. Make sure you watch NXT Wednesday nights only on the WWE Network. How times have changed from 5 years. Good match. This kind of had – it reminded me of a parallel between this one and the Bret Hart, Stone Cold Steve Austin match at Survivor Series 1996, where Austin was just coming up to that next level, Cena well-established, Bret Hart, of course, similar to that there, and then they fight again. But, you know, you just look at this match at that stage of Cena's career, and it's like, wow, I just don't – you really appreciate how gifted he is in the ring. He had a tornado DDT to a near fall. Then he had a springboard stunner at one point. Owens ends up winning the match gets on the microphone after, trashes John Cena. And then, of course, you know, we see them feud for a few months after that. Michael Cole comments after, this might be the most monumental win in WWE history. And JBL gave three sports references in this one. He commented at the beginning, this is like Magic and Larry Bird. And then he also said, Joe Namath claimed he would be the cheese, and this is what Kevin Owens did after winning. And then, of course, the last one he did, this was all just like Babe Ruth calling the shot at Wrigley Field, what Kevin Owens did tonight. So really good match. It's only 20 minutes long. Go back and watch it. Really gifted performance by both of them in Corpus Christi 2015 Elimination Chamber. Thank you, Chris, for suggesting that to me on Twitter this week, and maybe I'll do another one from a listener next week.
Joe Murray, your match to watch?
All right, guys, I watched it today. I'd recommend doing it 30 minutes, so you'll get the whole entire thing, and when you turn it on, it will all click in your head right away. Money in the Bank 2011, CM Punk versus John Cena. We all remember the pipe bomb, right? CM Punk's contract was up the day after Money in the Bank. If he wins the title, he's walking away from WWE. We know that John Cena, if he lost the match, he would have been fired from Vince McMahon. He came out to Not Culture Personality, by the way. Came out to his other theme song.
Fire Burns, because he was the leader of Nexus.
There you go. So he came out to that. Cena, dude, the crowd that night, I haven't heard a guy get over since Daniel Bryan's Yes Era, the Yes Movement. There has not been a guy that's gotten over since then. And maybe you guys can debate me on that, but the crowd was in Chicago. They loved CM Punk that night. He sat in the ring, kind of like how Aleister Black does a little bit right now, similar.
Style, yeah.
Yeah, but he sat there, and then all of a sudden the Cena music hit. Boos ranted around. Like there was the heel versus the, like, there was storyline was there. And I'll tell you this much, watching the match, John Cena gave every move that he had. The five moves of doom, he tried to do something off top of the rope, couldn't. Punk hit him with a knee to the ribs, which knocked him out of the ring, but eventually got him on a knee to the face and then pinned him. But what happened was Vince McMahon walked out with John Laurinaitis to try the old Montreal screw job from years ago. And Cena, so Cena was like, nope, it's not going to be that way. He got distracted, and that's how CM Punk won the match. After the match happened, Punk's in the ring. McMahon goes to the microphone, rips it off of Jerry Lawler, and says, get Alberto Del Rio out here. Del Rio comes in. Punk hits him, knocks him out. He's got the belt, kicks him in the face. Everyone's screaming. He yells out. It ends with him inside the crowd at one of the top of the rafters there in the loge. Place goes nuts. But this followed a lot of things, and it's just funny how we just brought up Triple H. But if you remember, they started a tournament the next night on who's going to be the new champion. And who came out? Triple H took away Vince McMahon's power and became what? Creator of board of director or whatever it was?
Yeah.
For that. And then I think Mysterio won and became the champion. Cena ended up beating him. And then there was what happened was CM Punk was rogue for a bit, right? Didn't he go to like a Comic-Con and like all these other events? And
Punk signed his contract an hour before money. In real terms, Punk signed his contract an hour before that show went to air in Chicago. Okay. And the play was going to be Punk was going to go to all these different territories, all these different indie shows, and defend the WWE title. And that was going to be the play. And so Vince changed his mind after a week and said, Punk, we need you at Raw. So they had Rey Mysterio beat Miz to open up Raw, I think. And then John Cena came out and challenged. And then John Cena beat Rey Mysterio at the end of the night, if memory serves me correctly. And then Cult of Personality plays.
Yeah. And what's it called? Cena wasn't fired because Triple H said, no, we're not going to fire him.
Right?
Right.
So Punk, Cult of Personality hits, and I pop because Cult of Personality was CM Punk's Ring of Honor music, so I knew what was going on. Yep. So Punk gets in the ring, and he's got the bigger belt than Cena. Yep. Cena's got like the replica belt that they sell on WWE Shop, and Punk's got this ginormous belt because they needed a match for SummerSlam.
Yep.
So and this is going to rage me into another Triple H. So Triple H has to be the referee for John Cena versus CM Punk at SummerSlam, right? Because he can't stop. So CM Punk wins over John Cena, and then here comes Alberto Del Rio to cash in on CM Punk, because I think there was a jackknife powerbomb by Kevin Nash, who then they do this whole thing, and Punk schools Kevin Nash on promos because he wasn't prepared. And then Triple H comes out of retirement just to beat CM Punk, because CM Punk had such momentum. And they did this whole thing, and they eventually had to put the belt back on CM Punk, because even though Triple H coming out of retirement to beat him, it didn't kill his momentum. And then guess what? Triple H went back into retirement. He went back into retirement after he beat CM Punk.
Anyways, 2011, Money in the Bank.
And I bet he called him too short.
But just quickly, am I wrong on the that hype though? CM Punk, and granted it was in Chicago, but dude, when I watched it, I was like, this is great. Like, because John Cena owned
all called it. In the ring, by the way.
John Cena was awesome in this match, I have to say. He put over CM Punk.
He put over Kevin Owens, too. He
put everybody over, though. But you know what I'm saying? And like,
yep, he's done it numerous times.
If you get a chance, watch it. It was a great way to end a pay-per-view.
Yeah. It's one of my favorite matches of all time. I almost flew out to Chicago for it, but there were reasons why I couldn't at the time. But that was one I wanted to be there for. because it was a situation where Punk's contract was expiring. He actually had to sign a day extension to do that match. And then they worked out the contract an hour before the show went to air is when CM Punk signed it. The anticipation, like they come back from the video package and the crowd knows that they're on camera and they start chanting CM Punk and they delay him playing his music. And then he milked it for all it was worth. And Colt Cabana, his friend at the time, was sitting front row with friends and family members. And he's sitting in the middle of the ring, just having a conversation with Colt. Be like, you hear this? This is pretty cool, isn't it?
Yeah. And that was, like I said, the pipe bomb and the ice cream bars. Remember that? The superstar ice cream bars, him and Vince. That was a good stuff.
You know what it was? He wanted his name on cups, right?
That's what it was.
He was upset about all these things that he didn't have.
Yeah.
And he actually called Cena, you're now the Red Sox, but really you're just the New York Yankees because you're a bitch or something like that.
That was in Boston. That show was the live contract negotiation in Boston.
And it was a go home show. Great storytelling. And look at that right there for the people who can't watch.
Oh, StarCast.
Listening.
Was that last year's?
StarCast Cup.
So I am showing Mike and Joe my CM Punk souvenir collector cup from StarCast 3, which was in Chicago. I went out there and spent some time out there, and I got my CM Punk collector's cup.
But
over my other shoulder is the CM Punk spinner belt, nameplate and all, signed by Mr. Punk.
This show has gone full circle, though. Is wrestling dying? It's dead compared to what it was then. Triple H, does he suck? Yes. John Cena still putting people over to this day.
Yeah.
You know, it's this thing has gone full circle today.
Fun show.
Right. Yeah, 90 minutes. We've gone long beyond the hour time limit draw.
People like the 90, though. They're cool with it.
I get mixed reviews on that, Mike.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, I hear people love it.
It's me. I went on tangents.
I went on tangents, too. I mean, whatever. It gets Mike some extra money. So
but thank you, James. You're a good man.
I'm in a decent mood tonight, so I'm trying to, you know, poke you enough, but also put you over. You know, so there's another story that I'll tell at some point. They'll put
you're an adequate American.
I'm Canadian, damn it. I love that line. I don't know.
I do too. I always laugh at that one. Go ahead.
All right, we need to wrap this up. They're giving me the go-home cue. Each week, you can listen to Wrestling Inside the Ropes on the podcast page of 98.5thesportshub.com and on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. While you're there, check out all the other original podcasts available from Boston's Home for Sports, including Joe Murray's Over Under 98.5 and Joe Murray's Just Sitting Here. Our podcasts are also available at bpodstudios.com and in Apple Podcasts and Google Podcasts. Next week, Mike and I will be back with Money in the Bank recap. Hopefully it's a good one. Hopefully it's over by 10 o'clock. And hopefully the scavenger hunt for the briefcase will be really good.
There's always a reason for better health. And here's Carlo with his.
My program with Awaken 180 actually started when my daughter was born. And at that time, I was over 300 pounds. I felt I owed it to her to better myself and my family, of course. And I'll never forget, it was my fourth week. I came in and my goals for that week were not met. And they found the positive in everything. And that was the biggest thing for me. Awaken 180 has provided me confidence, not only in my day-to-day eating, it's my day-to-day role as a father, as a friend. And that's something that for the longest time, I didn't have.
The benefits are endless after losing weight with Awaken 180. Carlo dropped his 84 pounds, and he did it in under 4 months. Scale results, life results, with the solution for weight loss online at awaken180weightloss.com.
The Dave McGilvery Finish Strong Foundation's goals are to inspire and empower youth across New England and beyond to increase physical activity, expand literacy, and build community and self-esteem through running, reading, and performing acts of kindness. Join us in our mission to empower youth through fitness and education. With your support, we can provide the opportunities for youth to cross their own finish line one step at a time. Together, we can build a stronger, healthier future. Go to DaveMcGilveryFoundation.org for more information. Looking for hope? House of Possibilities offers children and adults with disabilities a path to greater independence. From social to recreational programs to overnight respite and career and community access opportunities, House of Possibilities is changing the way people see disabilities and their program participants see themselves. Visit houseofpossibilities.org to learn more or to support their work. That's houseofpossibilities.org. House of Possibilities. See what belonging can do.